Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2002, the FBI, the ADL, and Christina Long.
Hello. We need a government. Every civilized nation needs a government. Certainly, there are independent people who just want to live out in the woods by themselves and not be bothered. They don't need a government. And there are weepy, wimpy, liberal types who whine, "Oh, why can't we all just get along with each other?" and who believe that governments wouldn't be necessary if we would just be nice and share everything. But believe me, these feminized flower power types don't know what they're whining about. Every civilized society does need a government. The problem with governments, even well-designed governments, is that they tend to get out of control. They tend to become corrupt. The wrong sort of people tend to get their hands on the levers of power. That's the problem Americans have today, big time. The U.S. government has become a malignant monster that not only is gobbling up the remaining freedom of its citizens as fast as it can, but also is threatening the very existence of our nation, the survival of our race. I'll repeat that. The U.S. government is doing two very harmful things. On the one hand, it is taking away our remaining freedom, using the excuse that only by taking away our freedom can it effectively fight against terrorism and thereby give us more security. And on the other hand, the government is coming more than ever before under the influence of the most destructive elements in our society. We'll talk about both of these things in detail and look at some specific examples. You know, this so-called war against terror that the Bush government and the controlled media claim to have been fighting ever since September 11th is an enormous fraud. The way to fight terrorism is to get rid of the un-American policies that caused terrorism in the first place. Why was the federal building in Oklahoma City bombed in 1995? It was a direct response to the U.S. government's massacre of the members of the Branch Davidian Church in Waco, Texas. Tim McVeigh explained that clearly enough. The U.S. government had no business laying siege to that church and then burning its members to death. Tim McVeigh wanted to send the government a message that such behavior would not be tolerated. He wanted to send a message that wouldn't be ignored. He wouldn't have had to send that message if the government hadn't committed the Waco massacre first and then refused to accept the blame for what it had done. Why were the World Trade Center and the Pentagon attacked last year? The attack was a direct response to the U.S. government's complicity in Israeli aggression in the Middle East. Osama bin Laden has explained that clearly enough. There would have been no September 11th attack if the U.S. government had been backing American interests in the Middle East instead of Jewish interests. The way to stop terrorism is to eliminate the causes of terrorism, especially when those causes are bad in themselves and should be eliminated even if they didn't cause terrorism. The arrogant and high-handed behavior of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the FBI that led to the Waco massacre are bad in themselves and should not be tolerated in a free country. It's not angry patriots like Tim McVeigh who are the cause of terrorism. He's just an agent. It's the arrogance and high-handed behavior of the government's secret police agencies that are the cause. The U.S. government's policy of supporting Israel at the expense of our own interests is bad in itself and should be eliminated. It's not Muslim fundamentalists like Osama bin Laden, who are the cause of terrorism. He's just an agent. It's the un-American foreign policy of the U.S. government that is the cause. But just as the government and the media, after the Oklahoma City bombing, refused to talk about the real cause of that bombing, since the September 11th attack, they have refused to talk about the real cause of that disaster, too. The government and the media don't want to make the secret police obey the law and respect the rights of citizens. And they certainly don't want U.S. foreign policy to put America's interests ahead of Israel's interests. And so instead of remedying the bad policies that were the causes of those catastrophes, they have made the bad policies even worse. They started a war in Afghanistan and are hot to make it an even bigger war. And they have unleashed the FBI and other secret police agencies, giving them free rein to rummage through the curbside trash or the email of people who are not even suspected of criminal activity, just to see whether or not the secret police can find something politically incorrect. They're able to get away with this because they have a constituency of lemmings who really believe that the government will allow them to consume in greater comfort and safety if they will just let the government do whatever it wants, including abolishing the Bill of Rights and bombing the hell out of everyone that Israel doesn't like. Let's be sure that I've made myself absolutely clear. This whole war against terror is phony. It's unnecessary. It's counterproductive. The terrorism Americans have experienced in the past decade, whether in Oklahoma City or New York or Washington, has not been the irrational activity of madmen, as the government and the media would have us believe. It has been the response to bad government policies from aggrieved men who had no other way of fighting back. The way to minimize terrorism in the future is to have better government policies, not to let tight-lipped little religious fanatics like Attorney General John Ashcroft have his secret police check library records to see what books we've been reading, or to let irresponsible dimwits like George Bush play at war in the Middle East and risk taking us all back to the Stone Age. And the reason for all of this, the reason for both the government's assault on our freedom and the warmongering in the Middle East, is the growing Jewish control over our government. Day by day, America is moving closer and closer to a total Judeocracy. If you've been paying attention to the news, you know that the FBI has been receiving a great deal of criticism recently for ignoring evidence of a coming terrorist attack prior to September 11th last year. There have been many insinuations from the media, which is to say from the Jews, that the FBI has become too soft and careless, and that it needs to be reorganized and needs to reorient its activities. Well, now we know one of the ways in which the FBI's activities are being reoriented, more snooping into the private lives of citizens. But there also are other ways. Last month, FBI Director Robert Mueller addressed a conference of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rit in Washington. I've spoken with you on several of these broadcasts about the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. It's a criminal organization that has been snuggling up to and infiltrating law enforcement agencies at every level. I reported to you more than once that the ADL had its offices in Los Angeles and San Francisco raided by police and was caught red-handed with thousands of stolen confidential police files. I reported that the ADL has strong ties not only to the government of Israel, but also to Jewish organized crime in this country. The head of the ADL, Abe Foxman, is one of the Jewish leaders who leaned on Bill Clinton to get a last-minute pardon for the billionaire Jewish master criminal and fugitive Mark Rich last year. None of this ADL involvement with Jewish criminals and criminal activity is a secret, except to the American public. It's all a matter of public record, but most people don't know about it because the Jewish media won't report it. The media always refer to the ADL as a respected human rights organization. And so that's the way the politicians and the federal bureaucrats treat the ADL. Certainly, Robert Mueller, the FBI director, knows all about the ADL's criminal activity and criminal connections, but he still accepted an invitation to address the organization last month. Here's an excerpt from what FBI Director Mueller told the ADL, and I quote from the text of his May 7th speech in Washington. "We in the FBI tremendously value your perspectives and your partnership. Your insights and research into extremism are particularly helpful to us, shedding light on the changing nature of the terrorist threats facing America. Your support of hate crime and terrorist investigations, which are now front and center in the work of the FBI, is essential to us. And the training and education you provide for the FBI and for law enforcement have never been more relevant. That includes the conference on extremist and terrorist threats you are sponsoring later this month at the FBI Academy. So thank you for all these efforts. And again, I look forward to working with you to strengthening our partnership." End of quote. That should scare the hell out of every patriotic American. The ADL, the Jewish organization that helped Jewish master criminal Mark Rich escape justice, the organization that gave an award to Jewish contract murderer Mo Dalitz in 1985, in appreciation of all the money received from Dalitz's criminal and enterprises, the organization that was caught red-handed with thousands of stolen police files, now has a partnership with the FBI and is teaching the FBI about the changing nature of terrorism in America. Specifically, what the ADL is teaching the FBI is that the people the FBI needs to keep an eye on are the hate criminals and speech criminals, the white racists and anti-Semites, the white extremists, the white Americans who complain about the growing influx of non-white immigrants, about multiculturalism, about the government's Israel First foreign policy, and about the Jewish control of the news and entertainment media. They are the new terrorists and potential terrorists, according to the ADL. And the FBI is going along for the ride. As Director Mueller announced in his speech last month, those new threats are now front and center in the work of the FBI. Now I'll tell you what's not front and center in the FBI's work. I'll begin with an especially shocking bit of news that some of you already may have heard. In fact, there's even a very brief item about it in the June 3rd issue of Newsweek magazine. That's the sex murder in Danbury, Connecticut on May 24th of 13-year-old Christina Long. Christina, a bright, pretty sixth grader, was lured to a shopping mall in Danbury by 25-year-old Saul Dos Reis, a mestizo illegal alien from Brazil. Dos Reis had sex with the blonde, blue-eyed little gringa in his car, then killed her and threw her corpse into a nearby creek. Well, you may think, that sort of thing happens all the time these days, but it's just a local police matter. What does it have to do with the FBI or the ADL? Let me tell you. The murder of 13-year-old Christina Long didn't just happen. It wasn't just a fluke. It was the product of a process that has been developing for decades. This individual murder by itself may have been unpredictable, but the process leading to the murder was deliberate. It was planned, and the process has targeted not just Christina, but every young white Gentile girl in America. Let's look at Christina a little more closely. She was a sixth-grade cheerleader at a private Catholic school, St. Peter's, in Danbury. A good student and described as sweet by those close to her, Christina had many of the interests common to other girls her age: fashion, dancing, popular music. Her friends did note, however, that recently Christina had begun using cosmetics heavily and dressing provocatively. To understand why, one only needs to look at what she wrote about herself in her internet postings. She wrote in Black Jive Talk, she evidently had picked up from watching MTV. The music she listened to was rap. Christina's favorite group was the black female trio called Destiny's Child, which performed songs with titles like Stimulate Me and Bootylicious. Here are just a couple of sentences from her private website, and I quote, "I love to shop, but then again, what girl doesn't? I like hot cars, too. I'm like dress nice. I'm not ho. I just dance a little sexier than most girls." End of quote. For the uninitiated, "I'm not ho" is black talk for "I'm not a whore." But Christina dressed and talked like a whore. When she went to the shopping mall, she went with the intention of having sex with a 25-year-old illegal alien she had met on the internet. What led a white sixth grader to behave like that? I'll tell you, and I'll also tell you that many, many other young white girls are behaving like Christina, and a lot of them are even younger than 13. Do you remember JonBenet Ramsey, the 6-year-old girl who was murdered in Boulder, Colorado, in December 1996 by an unknown person? Like Christina, she was a cute, blue-eyed blonde. Like Christina, she used cosmetics heavily, wore sexy clothes, and danced provocatively at the age of 6. That seemed such a bizarre thing at the time that it received an enormous amount of media coverage. All of the media attention, however, focused on the murder mystery aspects of the case. Who had killed little JonBenet? Nobody asked why a 6-year-old white girl from a well-to-do family was dressing and behaving like a 20-year-old strip club dancer. That's really a taboo subject, but we'll talk about it anyway. The more general question is, why are young white girls, some as young as JonBenet Ramsey, others 12 or 13 like Christina Long, dressing and trying to behave like adult women? Why are they trying to be sexy at such an early age? I wish we had a lot more time to answer this question. All I can do today is give you a few bare-bones answers and then let you dig into it yourself. The basic answer as to why very young white girls are trying to be sexy is that young girls are very fashion conscious, and the fashion being pushed by the media to which they are exposed is early teen and preteen sexuality. And I hardly need to tell you that the people pushing this sexualizing of children are Jews, and that they are doing it deliberately and consciously. It's not a trend that just happened to develop by itself. The media through which young white girls like JonBenet and Christina are receiving this message of premature sexuality are multicultural entertainment media and fashion advertising directed at children. You know, it used to be that parents decided what their 11 and 12 and 13-year-old children should wear. Parents decided what fashions were appropriate and picked the clothes, but not any longer. Let me quote a spokesman, Kurt Barnard, for the children's garment industry. In our sophisticated day and age, Mr. Barnard told a writer for the publication Business First, a 10-year-old girl can be expected to try and exercise her own sense of fashion. And guess who it is that manipulates that 10-year-old girl's sense of fashion? The dominant media influence on young teens comes from MTV, which is owned by the Jew Sumner Redstone. Says MTV's chairman of the board, Bob Pittman, and I quote, "At MTV, we don't just shoot for the 14-year-olds, we own them," end of quote. The man who decides on the content of the entertainment presented to 14-year-olds is MTV's president of programming, Brian Graydon, a homosexual Jew. Nickelodeon, a cable channel also owned by Sumner Redstone, shoots for the younger teens and preteens and is pushing the same trend as MTV. Bruce Friend, the vice president of planning for Nickelodeon, says, and I quote, "In the last 10 years, we've seen a rapid development of upper-age children. The 12 to 14-year-olds of yesterday are the 10 to 12s of today. The rise of the preteen teen is the biggest trend we've seen," end of quote. Friend is seconded by New York market researcher Michael Cohen, who says, "There's no question there's a deep trend, not a passing fad, toward kids getting older, younger." Redstone's child poisoners take frequent polls to see what effect their poison is having. The Nickelodeon Yankelevich Youth Monitor found in its polls that by the time they are 12, children describe themselves as, quote, "flirtatious, sexy, trendy, athletic, cool." And Nickelodeon's Bruce Friend reports that by age 11, children in focus groups say they no longer think of themselves as children. Well, that's the entertainment media side of the coin. The other side of the coin is the children's fashion industry itself, which, as you may have guessed, is as heavily Jewish as the entertainment media. From the clothing chains, Gap Kids and Old Navy, which are run by Donald Fisher and Millard Drexler, to the Wet Seals Zootopia stores, run by Irving Teitelbaum, and Limited 2, which is run by Michael Raiden, the Jewish influence on children's clothing is pervasive and pernicious. You may have heard of the recent protest by outraged parents over the children's division of Abercrombie & Fitch introducing thong-style underwear for 7 to 14-year-old girls. Until 1988, Abercrombie & Fitch was well known as a traditional American supplier of quality outdoor attire. Then it was acquired by the clothing chain The Limited, where, under the guidance of Leslie Wexner, a fervently Zionist Jew, it was transformed into a purveyor of trendy, provocative attire for young people, and then spun off as an independent company. Limited 2 was another of Wexner's creations that followed a similar course. The sexual exploitation of white children by Jewish fashion designers and executives can be traced back at least as far as the early 1980s, when the bisexual Jew Calvin Klein hired Brooke Shields to model his line of jeans and later devised an ad campaign using children in seductive poses. Today's children are being morally and culturally abused by a fashion industry that receives its inspiration from a degenerate entertainment industry. 7 to 14-year-old children who visit Limited 2 stores have been encouraged to come to the mall dressed as their favorite female pop star, such as the bizarrely attired and vulgar performer who calls herself Pink. What could be more obvious proof of a deliberate attempt to corrupt our youth? If the FBI really wanted to accomplish something useful for America, instead of collaborating with the ADL's program to abolish our Bill of Rights, it would investigate and terminate the constant flow of propaganda spewed out by the Jewish media and fashion industries which is subverting our youth. Instead, it is up to us to neutralize this assault on our children. If you are the parent, grandparent, uncle, or aunt of young white children, you have a sacred obligation to help them develop a lifelong resistance to these Jewish attempts to destroy their racial and cultural identity. Don't wait until a policeman comes to your home bearing tragic news. Remember what happened to Christina Long. Thanks for being with me again today.